Welcome to the Prosperity Podcast, fresh, alternative personal finance talk for independent thinkers who prosper outside of Wall Street. Here's your host, best-selling author, Kim D.H. Butler, and no BS money guy, Todd Strobel.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Prosperity Podcast. This is no BS money guy, Todd Strobel. Got the president of Partners for Prosperity and best-selling financial author, and of course, our co-host with us today, and that's Kim Butler. And today we're going to be talking about the list of financial planning lies. And believe it or not, this list is long enough. It's probably going to take 10 shows just to get through it, which is kind of sad, but we're going to jump in here today and get through as many of them as we can. Welcome, Kim.
Well, thank you. It's sad because there's that many lies out there. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I mean, I'm just surprised how many of them there were. I expected to see, you know, 6, 8, not 20.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's funny. I came up with this list long ago. I wish I had dated it, but it's something that somebody asked me about. Like, well, you talk about busting the financial planning lies. Like, what are they? And I have to give our listeners a nod because that was the question that came. And it reminded me that our Busting the Financial Planning Lies book is not organized around a series of lies. That book was titled after it was written. And I'm clear that it needs an upgrade. So thank you for asking the question. And more importantly, we're going to start to do some recording on this, and then we'll work to get a version 2 of the Busting Financial Planning Lies book, whereby these things are proved out numerically. In all of our books these days, we've been working on not only having the concept there, but the numbers that support it. And so it'll take us probably a year or so, but that'll be one of the next things that we work on is either an upgrade or a redo or a part 2 of the Busting Financial Planning Lies books based on this list of lies that we've got in front of us. And yet today we're just going to tackle a couple of them that are the beginning of the financial planning lies. And they start out with really people at their earliest age when they start to save money. And it's that saving and investing are the same thing. That's the first lie we want to bust. So Todd, I'll turn the tables on it. Let's have you take a stab at that one for a minute, that saving and investing are the same thing.
Super. First of all, just to start off, I want to mention one thing, and that's there's so many people out there that want to write a book. Part of our audience is other financial advisors. Everybody out there probably has a book in them at some point. With the whole print on demand concept, as you develop, you can literally change the book in minutes. And the updated version is printed as people buy it. Not a concept we need to spend a lot of time on, but it certainly has changed the way we look at books, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And the company that does that, just so people know, is called Create Space. It's owned by Amazon, createspace.com. And like you said, it's a print-on-demand book. It's the best concept. It's a self-published book that you can upload and create new versions of, and we found it to be very, very effective and helpful for our listeners. And then, of course, we always create audio versions of those books as well that go on to Audible, which, of course, is an Amazon company. And so you've got a nice little package there. You have a print version for those that like to read and an audio version for those that like to listen.
Super. Well, saving and investing. I mean, first of all, the word saving just is not fun on your tongue. It just doesn't feel right. But the term investing is exciting because you're thinking of watching something grow, having something that you're not necessarily spending your physical time on, but yet is continuing to grow, continuing to create value. And in exchange for that value, you're getting a rate of return on your investment. Now, the problem is that if you can't learn the savings part, you can never participate in the investing part.
That is so true. So how do you think you learn the savings part?
Well, I think, unfortunately, the savings part has to be taught on such a small level. I mean, whether it's $100 a month or $75 a month or whatever, the accounts are small, it's boring, you're not feeling like, you know, you could go out and most investments won't even let you in. because the amount is so low, but yet most people income continues to increase over time. So if you continue to increase your investments while your income grows up, your lifestyle can maintain the same while kind of building up a curve and a push on the saving side.
Yeah, it is amazing how just immediately people want to go to the investment. And I remember early in my career, I could not have made a distinction. Even when I'd been doing this work with clients for 5 or 6 years, I could not have made a distinction between saving and investing. And yet, it's so critical that we understand the difference. And saving really has two forms. There's the noun part of it, which is a savings account. Now, that doesn't mean it literally has to be a savings account at a bank. It could be life insurance cash value or some other thing. But that's the noun part of it. But then there's the verb part of it, with saving as an action. And yes, it's boring. And no, nobody wants to talk about it. And furthermore, most financial planners that are out there don't get paid to help you in this realm, so they're not going to spend any time on it. And yet, every single person, literally up until you're at least 70 years old, I might even say 75, should be saving. You should be receiving some income and putting aside a portion of it, 5%, 10%, 15%, 20%, sometimes even 30%. Of every single dollar that is income should be set aside as savings. And the reason for this is because the older people get, the more liquidity they want. Now, absolutely, there are families that will get to a point where they do have enough liquidity. But I've shared this example a million times, and that's Oprah Winfrey's emergency/opportunity fund is $70 million. Because that is the number that is her peace of mind money. Now, notice I said emergency and opportunity. When we start to think of saving as opportunity money, not just emergency money, I think it helps us get more excited about the verb saving and more excited about the noun saving account, or again, cash value of life insurance, or whatever you're going to use for your emergency/opportunity fund. Because if we can be focused on opportunities that come about in the future, we can be much more interested in it. But again, most financial planners don't even go there, don't even talk about saving. And if they do talk about it, it's 3 to 6 months of your income for your emergency fund. Boring. I rarely hear them talk about opportunities. Now, let's switch and talk about the investing side. Investing, in our minds, needs to have a goal. And as we've stated numerous times, our goal is double digit, no loss of principal. Doesn't mean we're always going to hit that goal, but that's what we should be shooting for. My question to our listeners is, what's your goal? Do you have a goal for your investments? Now, in our world, most good investments that meet that goal require lump sums. And the only way you're going to get to lump sums of decent value, we're talking usually 50,000, sometimes 100, sometimes as little as 25, but the only way you're going to get there is to either get a large bonus or sell a piece of real estate or build up your opportunity fund. And since most people get paid monthly, it makes sense to build up your opportunity fund monthly and then parlay that into a lump sum, which can then do your investing. And I just want to say one more about this lie, because it's so pervasive, and that's that most financial planners are going to literally try to ride the fence. In other words, instead of having savings clearly on one side of the fence and investing clearly on the other side of the fence, they're going to try to give you an account that is on top of the fence and consequently is unstable. The most common one is an annuity. There's another common one, which is a bond or a bond fund, which we'll talk a little bit more about here in a minute. But what happens when you try to ride the fence is you don't do a good job on either side, because you don't have your foot planted firmly in savings and planted firmly in investing. You're trying to do the or the riding the fence job. You don't do either job very well. And I think that's just a real sad statement because it is truly what most typical financial planners do to their clients in not making saving and investing different things, but instead of trying to live this lie of having them be the same thing.
I think absolutely. And when you think of the word savings, you're automatically, you need to think that you're not going to get as high a rate of return. There are varying rates of return, even at the savings level, but generally, well, all the time, you can't get as much as if the money was set aside specifically for investments. But the sacrifice that you're making on rate of return is for liquidity and peace of mind, knowing that you can touch that money fast and it's not locked away has a value. And that value makes up for the lower rate of return. So, you know, keeping those two things separate, I think that makes a lot of our clients feel a lot better saying, okay, yeah, this is liquid. I can have this. If I lose my job tomorrow, my house burns down, whatever, I've got this and I can get to it fast. Now, this amount of money over here, you know I don't need it for 5 years. That's an investment. And we can make it work harder because we're willing to make that commitment and sacrifice that liquidity for a period of time.
Yeah, it is amazing the cost that we levy against our investments because of lack of liquidity. In other words, we hurt ourselves because we have to pull money from things that are not liquid because we didn't do a good job in the savings department. And so consequently, our investments get eroded. And that costs us a lot. So don't do that. Build up your savings / emergency fund and keep building it up the entirety of your life so that you have more and more and more available and then parlay that into investing.
Super. And Kim, before we get into our next topic, I just want to mention that you've written a book on that subject that is specifically available at no charge for our podcast listeners.
Yes, it is called Financial Planning Has Failed. It is available only at partnersforprosperity.com/ebook. And it covers a lot of the things that we've hit on today, as well as some specifics about both the savings vehicle that is our favorite form of savings and the couple different investments that we like that do fit our stated goal of double-digit return, no loss of principal.
And if we happen to have a traditional financial planner out there that's listening to this, I would challenge you to go download that book and we will give you podcast time to state your argument.
Great idea.
All right, let's move on to our next topic, which are bonds are the place to store your safe money.
Yeah, it's hard to say that without laughing, isn't it? So this bond arena, bond or bond mutual fund, used to be, and frankly still is, much to my dismay, the go-to place for, quote, safe money. And I absolutely do not understand it. I used to agree with it. I mean, municipal bonds, good heavens, everybody knew that municipalities always paid. And so those were a very, very safe and, of course, tax-efficient environment. And yet here we are today with many, many different cities not paying their bonds, not keeping their stoplights going, not paying their firemen and their policemen. And so clearly to me, muni bonds are not a place to store safe money. And yet you still have very, very large numbers of typical financial planners out there and stockbrokers, of course, stating that bonds are the place to move money to, that bonds are the traditional safe haven, that bonds are a good correlation to stocks because supposedly when stocks go up, bonds go down and vice versa. But we've seen that disproven numerous times over the last 10 years or so. We're here in the middle of 2016 now. I would say even the last 15 years, we've seen a lack of connectivity that used to be very static in the stock and bond arena now be very, very dynamic. And so it makes for a very unsafe place to put money. Furthermore, as we know, if interest rates do rise, which we feel like they have to at some point, then bond values go down. And that's a tough thing to understand sometimes. But as interest rates rise, bond values, the actual dollar figure that equates to the value of the bond goes down. And so you could literally have an account worth $100,000 and then over a course of time, it's worth $80,000. And that is not safe. And if we're talking about safe money, that is often also liquid money. It's money you can control, money you want to use, money that you can borrow against if you'd like, or just withdraw. You want to know that that money is going to go up every single year, not have the potential to go down. It just doesn't make any sense. The word up and down should have nothing to do with the word safe.
And we may have some newer investors with us today. And I think it's important that people understand that when you buy a bond and it specifies that it's going to pay a certain interest rate, that part does not get negotiated. So if you buy a 5-year bond that's guaranteed to pay you a 5% coupon per year, it will pay a 5% coupon per year for a designated period of time, and then you'll get a return on that principal. The problem is that when you're talking about long-term bonds and long-term bond funds, when interest rates go up, if I'm holding a 3% bond and current bonds cost 6%, why would somebody want to buy my 3% bond when the government is currently issuing bonds or the municipality is currently issuing bonds at 6%? So in order to make my 3% bonds pay 6%, which is really just leveling the playing field, the only way to do that is to reduce the face amount of the bond. And this is where the danger lies. You know, I think if you needed a short-term place and you bought a 5% bond for 2 years and that's what you needed and you held the bond till maturity, you know, you get what you paid for. The problem is if you're in a fund that is owning all kinds of different shares of bonds, and they're having to constantly buy inside that portfolio, the principal value of the portion of the fund that you owe substantially drops to compensate for those interest rate increases. Now, on the flip side, if interest rates drop, your bond value actually increases because people would be willing to pay a premium to buy your bond. The problem is when have we had an interest rate drop discussion lately, and where could they go?
You know, somebody said the other day, oh, we don't have negative interest rates yet. And I said, oh, yes, we do. The fees that are on your bond accounts are causing those interest rates to literally be negative. The fees that are on your checking accounts, your savings accounts, your money markets and your other liquid style accounts at banks and credit unions and brokerage houses are causing those interest rates to literally effectively be negative. Like, you might be earning 0.5, but if your fees are 1%, then you're negative.
And you still get to pay taxes on the 0.5.
That's right. Yes. And we haven't even gotten to the subject of inflation yet. So, we won't do that to our listeners today. But yes, it is important to just be aware that there are other better places to store safe money where you can control the money. It's completely liquid. You can use it for whatever you want. It acts like equity, meaning you can borrow against it. That little acronym, CLUE, C-L-U-E, is the way that I describe cash value of whole life insurance, not universal life, not equity index life, not variable life, but the boring old, been around couple hundred years, whole life insurance. That is our preferred place to store our controllable liquid, use for whatever we want, act like equity money, not bonds, not bank savings accounts, not money market accounts at brokerage houses, not bond funds, not municipalities, etc. So if you have not checked into this product, you'll want to grab the book Live Your Life Insurance, which is at Amazon, both an audio version and a physical book, as well as a Kindle version, and read up on it. It's a great strategy to use the product, whole life insurance, as a place for your emergency and opportunity funds.
Super. Well, again, we went a little bit long today. We still have a big list to work on here over the next few podcasts. But again, we encourage everybody to ask questions, voice your opinions. All our goal is to educate you to the truth so that you learn how to ask your own questions, so that you can look at investments and make your own decision. You certainly may have access to investments that are fantastic, but if you don't know how to evaluate them against the hype of the typical financial planning world, you're going to end up stuck in something that you really wish you didn't. And that's our goal, is to make sure that doesn't happen. This is No BS Money Guy, Todd Strobel. Special thanks again to Kim Butler. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Prosperity Podcast. To take control of your money and have it work for you, visit us at partnersforprosperity.com. If you liked this episode, make sure you subscribe and leave a review.